want a piece of me?
Do I feel like it? Well, do you, Bunk?
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
You do! You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
What's up, film fans? Welcome to a new episode. Welcome to a bonus episode. This is We Were Soldiers, and welcome to the Cinnamon Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Juan, and I am joined alongside here with Zach. Zach,
hey.
How is your Thursday, my friend?
It is Thursday. It is one day before Friday, and we are home free.
Pre-Friday, we're getting our pre-drink in. I'm thankful to be joined by you for another bonus episode. These bonus episodes are so fun and so unique. So again, welcome everybody to another episode. Man, we are on the heels, Zach, of our biggest episode yet. Trailing episode 200 this past Monday, live 4th of July Monday from historic Rodeo Cinema this past Thursday. Man, you know, 3 days later, 4 days later, man, how do you feel after something like that?
I think the thing that really just baffles my mind is that we're at 200. I mean, we got to 200 freaking episodes. I remember, I think you sent a text early this year saying when I first started, you guys were like 15, 16 episodes in. And now, you know, you guys were at 200. And, you know, it's all four of us, me, you, Craig and Ed, that like to come and talk about movies every week. And most importantly, it's the listeners. The listeners is really what got us here.
And not only that, like, there's the address again. I know this is an ad-free show, guys, but we just got off the heels of a live event, 2221 Exchange Avenue in Oklahoma City, Rodeo Cinema. Highly recommend. Go check them out. And you know what? We're not done. We're going to do it again. Sunday, July 31st, episode 204. A24 month kicks off everything, everywhere, all at once, live again at Rodeo Cinema. So I can't wait. I think it's going to be fun. Yeah. And you know what? Not only is it a 200 milestone for any podcast, but we're doing it week in and week out, a brand new show every week. We've never skipped a beat. Mm-hmm. We're developing listeners. We're developing a relationship with the listeners. And I think that is what is more important than anything. You know, we got people interacting. We got people messaging, emailing.
There's several emailers that are, they comment every week.
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? I highly recommend it. If you guys haven't interacted with us yet, go ahead and do so. Facebook.com/ The Cinnamon Movie Podcast. The Instagram is all one word, The Cinnamon Movie Podcast. Twitter is at Cinnamon405. And then the email is cinnamon921@gmail.com.
Yep.
So that's cinnamon921@gmail.com. Hit us up. We do an email bag every single Monday. So, and you know what? We just got done talking about our top five Will Smith movies, which we are still getting top fives in about that. And then this Monday, we're talking our top five movies of 2022 so far. And you know what? Some of the emails that I've seen so far have been really, really fun. I can't wait to share them. Yeah, I can't wait to share them with everybody on Monday.
Which we'll be talking about Thor, Love and Thunder, which is in theaters right now. But before we get to Thor, we're starting up, like, you guys last week, you guys did Attack of the Clones, which celebrates its 20th anniversary. I really, you know, Johnny asked me what we were going to do after the Jurassic Park series. I was looking at the list of 2002 films, and there are so many movies celebrating 20 years this year. I mean, it's kind of insane.
Yeah.
So, you know, we thought, you know, we're not going to be able to get to all of them, but why don't we dedicate a whole month and pick four, well, I guess five now, and just talk about five films that came out in 2002 and kind of celebrate their 20th anniversary.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many movies from 02, like Zach just said, we couldn't do it justice. Even if you picked 10 and I picked 10, we would still be leaving out a lot.
Yeah.
So Zach, you picked two and I picked two. So those of you that have not heard a bonus episode, we're in and we're out. We don't have any ads. We don't have any segments. We just dedicate the entire 1 hour conversation to the film. And that's what we are getting into today. So Zach, we're doing your movie first. Yep. We Were Soldiers turns 20 years old this year. And what better way to start technically the month of July with bonus episodes, just a few days after the 4th of July with We Were Soldiers.
Yep.
So again, a look back, episode 200, go listen now to wherever you listen to podcasts at, or check it out on this YouTube channel, Emo Sawa Productions YouTube channel is now our official visual home to all of our podcasts. You can still listen to us wherever you listen to your regular podcasts at. So We Were Soldiers currently on IMDb has a 7.1, 64% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 65% Metascore, while the Google users like it at 91%. With a budget of $75 million, it only grossed $114 million at the box office with a March 1st, 2002 release date. The story of the first major battle of the American phase of the Vietnam War and the soldiers on both sides that fought it, while their wives wait nervously and anxiously at home for the good news or the bad news. We Were Soldiers currently stars Mel Gibson, Madeline Stowe, Greg Kinnear, Sam Elliott, Chris Klein, Carrie Russell, Barry Pepper, Ryan Hurst, Josh Daughtry, John Hamm, and directed by Randall Wallace. Let's talk about Randall Wallace for a little bit in our director talk, which is a segment. And technically, you know, we said no segments, but this is a segment that we started in January.
Yeah.
Looking at his filmography, just as a writer, he's really heavily acclaimed. Yeah. But now as a director, he's directed more of your kind of faith driven movies, I guess. He's written some of those as well, like Point of Honor, Heaven is for Real, The Secretariat, We Were Soldiers, The Man in the Iron Mask. Those are the only movies he's directed.
Yeah, those are his directorial efforts. Be honest, Man in the Iron Mask, that's really one of the few Leonardo DiCaprio movies I haven't seen. We Were Soldiers, we're going to talk about Secretariat. That's the horse racing one with Diane Lane and John Malkovich, I think. Yes. And then, like you said, Heaven is for Real. His really claim to fame was he was the writer for Braveheart, which, you know, stars Mel Gibson. He was nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. He didn't win, though. He also wrote the screenplay to Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor. So,
and this movie, We Were Soldiers, you can currently stream on Paramount Plus. So, yeah. Let's dig into it. You know what? That's one of the first things I thought of when I saw this movie. Written by the writer, he helped write Braveheart.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a mistake that Mel Gibson did not direct this movie?
Oh, well, I mean, if you've seen Hacksaw Ridge, you might have think Mel Gibson directed this movie. But, I mean, I
beg to differ.
2002, he had this in Signs, which we're going to talk about probably here in a month or two. So, another film celebrating 20 years. But so I think Mel Gibson had kind of taken a backseat to directing, because I don't think his next film he directed was until Apocalypto, which I think was a couple years after this. So, but I mean, I kind of feel it feels like a Mel Gibson directed film, not so much because of the violence, but just kind of like the cinematography in some ways kind of feels like his style.
We'll get into it. I'm a little opposite viewing of it. I feel like this should have been a Mel Gibson directed film, and I feel like it couldn't have been further from a Mel Gibson directed film. I see what you're talking about when it comes to how gory it is, But I feel like if it was Mel Gibson, it would have been over the top, maybe.
Yeah. To a certain extent, but yeah, I kind of agree.
So let's dig into it. Read you guys the plot. Zach, what was it like seeing this movie for the first time? Do you remember your first time view of it? And if not, what was it like revisiting it for the podcast?
So, to be honest, this is... I got to see this in the theater. My mom took me... Actually, I distinctly remember seeing this at Quell Springs. This is one of the very few films growing up that really had an impact. Not so much as like a film fan, but as like a young child, kind of not really understanding what war really meant at that time. I was 10 years old when this came out. So probably, I don't know if it was the best choice to see, taking a young kid to see this, but I distinctly remember coming out of the theater and I felt numb and I felt just honestly scared, because like I had never seen really anything like that before. And I distinctly remember we got in the car and was on our way home, and my mom kind of explained, look, you know, the reason I took you to see that was not because it was a war film, not because it was, you know, an action film. She kind of had to explain the difference, the movie and real life. And she said, the reason I took you to see this is because that was real. What happened in that film, yeah, this, you know, didn't happen yesterday. It didn't happen 2 days ago. It was like, you know, 40 years or 30 years by that point. But the events in that film, the Vietnam War was real. The violence, the loss of life that happened on a daily basis over there. And that was something that really affected me. And to be honest, I've not seen this movie in its entirety since then.
Nice.
And on the rewatch, it really punched me in the gut, man. Even 20 years later.
So I had heard about this movie, you know, sprinkled here and there throughout the, you know, years of just living and, you know, being a movie fan, really, really digging into film, probably at age 17 and being, you know, just kept digging and digging. This is a movie I never owned or had the desire to watch up until maybe a few years ago. And then I finally purchased it, found it, and still never seen it. Honestly, never had the desire to watch it.
Was it still Saran wrap till today?
No. I opened it a few years ago when I got it. And I remember starting it, but I turned it off right around the time that they're having their dance the night before they go out.
Yeah.
So, and I had the same feels this time around, but let me get into it. So never seen it all the way through, watched it for the first time today in its entirety. And we will get into it again. If it's 20 years old, if you guys have not seen it now, spoiler alert, it is available on Paramount Plus. Or you can get it on Blu-ray with, you know, find it on Amazon probably. I wanted to ask this to you, Zach. Does this movie get lost in the shuffle when you're talking about some of the, I'm not even going to say great, when you talk about some of the war movies at all?
Yeah.
I feel like it doesn't get brought up at all. And I think it gets lost in translation a lot.
I totally agree. I think this is a film that's pretty much been forgotten. I mean, I don't want to say that, but I think it's true. You never hear anyone talk about it anymore, you know? And like you said, there are probably better war films. I mean, you know, Saving Private Ryan's on the pedestal. I don't think anyone could touch that. But I mean, in terms of the realistic nature of this film, I think it's right up there with Saving Private Ryan. I think it's up there trying to think of another.
That's my next question. What does a war film need in order to be great?
I think a great war film needs to tell, I think it needs to show the reality of it. You know, it's not, you know, we had some mixed reaction to 1917 when we did that a couple years ago. And the reason I praise that movie is just, you know, it's obviously it's technically incredibly well done, but the reality of going through the trenches and seeing the dead bodies is probably the smell, the stench, and just reaction to that. That all happened. That's all real. Everything in this movie that we were soldiers happened. The battle of Iadrang, I apologize if I butchered that. That is the ridge. It's considered one of the bloodiest battles in the Vietnam War. The Ken Burns documentary, that he did a 10 episode thing about the Vietnam War, and this actual, you don't talk about the film, but he talks about the actual event in the series, and it's truly amazing that anyone would be able to go through that and survive that, to be honest.
So let me ask you this. You think this is, you know, this goes up there with some of the great war movies of all time. I thought about this today, and I wanted to ask you earlier, but I saved it for this. I haven't thought of one. Have you seen a bad war movie?
A bad war movie?
I know, and there's tons and tons of them out there. You know, there's great old ones too. Stuff like, you know, technically the bridges on the Kauai River.
Yeah.
There's some old ones out there.
Yeah.
But looking at my filmography and some recent watches and just some stuff throughout time, I haven't seen one. And if I have, nothing's really popping into my head.
I think, and I wouldn't really even consider this a bad war movie, but I think the Unbroken, did you see that? With it's directed by Angelina Jolie, about Louis Lambert.
I haven't seen Unbroken.
Louis Zamperini. He was an Olympic runner who was taken prisoner during World War II. It's a good movie, but I expected a lot more from it. So that's probably my only thing about it. That's probably my, as a viewer. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think I've seen a bad war film, you know, to be honest.
So let's get into this again. You guys can email us at cinemen921@gmail.com. If you're watching, it's all right here. Email us your star ratings of We Were Soldiers as we get ready to get into it.
Before we go, what makes a great war film for you? You know, I kind of said like if they could just depict the realistic nature of the war, the situation. Yeah.
You know, I can throw two different subject matters up there. I can throw Saving Private Ryan up there and be like, hey, you know, obviously the grittyism, the rawness of emotion, the rawness of the way it looked as far as wounds. Hacksaw Ridge does a great job. I think a great war movie not only has to be gritty and raw, but it has to have emotion in it as well.
Yeah.
And it has to be memorable. That is where I have an issue with this movie, and we're going to get into it.
Okay.
Learning about Sergeant Moore, I guess, or not really Sergeant, I guess. Is he a Sergeant? Yeah.
Yeah,
Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing how faith-based driven he is in this movie with his family and his little kids. I think in the first 40 minutes, if I had any issues with this movie, I think it would be the first 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Maybe that even that first hour. And I know it's they're trying to set you up to where you care so much. They want in this movie, they want you to care about the families, if not mm-hmm. more about the families than the actual war heroes.
Right.
Which I think threw me for a curveball, because in any other war movie, it's the opposite. The family gets a back seat and the soldiers get the front seat.
Yeah.
But in this one, it's like, hey, the first 45 minutes, we're going to not only introduce you to the soldiers, but here's their families. Here's some moments.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where I might have had a little issue with it. But again, this is the very first time watch for me. So going solely in on a first time watch, that would probably be one of my just biggest worrisomes about it. Is that the first 45 minutes of pacing was just, I kind of felt like I was twiddling my thumbs. even though the cinematography was fun, you know, the acting by Mel Gibson was good. I don't think I liked some of the side soldiers, some of the side characters. And I'll have you talk about this because you've seen this more than I have. But for some reason, Chris Klein, he kind of just didn't do it for me. I didn't have any...
Was that the young Jack and the...
Yeah.
With the
family.
Yeah.
He's the one that has the baby in the first 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And again, I know he was hot this time of year, this time around. You know, he had just got done coming off the American Pie movies. So everybody was casting him at this time.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't, he wasn't believable for me as.
Is that because you've seen American Pie? I'm going to be honest. I've never seen any of the American Pies. It just doesn't really interest me. And so.
No. I think it's just he's just not believable in a lot of things he does.
Mm-hmm.
Even in American Pie, he's my least favorite character in American Pie. I just don't feel like he's memorable in any of those movies. So
yeah.
I feel like, you know, he was the same in this one.
Yeah. To me, when I was young, when I was younger,
how did you feel about the first 45 minutes?
The first 45 minutes to me, it really sets up, and I think, and I don't know, did you watch like the 30-minute documentary? Oh no, you finished hopped on here, so you haven't.
Yeah, I wanted to, but it's just been a crazy week for me.
One of the big things I learned from the documentary was that they wanted to show the family point of view about this. They wanted to show. If you are a army wife, if you are a mother, a woman with a family, and her soldier husband goes off to war, how does that affect you? If they come back, how does that affect you? If they lose someone, which, you know, we'll get into it, but that sequence where they deliver the death letters, it's so powerful. It's undeniably powerful. And so I appreciate that, because I'm sure at some point before this, there was a film that kind of hinted at it, but we've never really seen it like this before. And so the only two wives that you really kind of quote unquote care about is Madeline Stowe, who's Moore's husband, and Carrie Russell, who is Jack's wife. And so
Carrie Russell to me did a fantastic job in this movie.
Yeah. I kind of wish she was a little bit more in the movie. She's only in it maybe 10, 15 minutes maybe. And that's really, she's just kind of like sidelined kind of. I mean, that's terrible to say, but
what did you think of this? This is kind of where I had a little scratch in my head moment. Somebody who they really wanted you to care for, obviously Jack, played by Chris Klein. I felt like the movie was geared more towards Barry Pepper's character, who plays the reporter.
Yes.
I feel like they kind of threw you a swerve, and they wanted you to care more about his character than the guy who ultimately passed away, who left a newborn and a wife back home, which was Chris Klein's character.
Yeah,
It's almost like once Chris Klein went to war, they forgot all about him.
Well, and I get that to a certain extent. This is based off the book We Were Soldiers Once and Young, and it's written by Hal Moore and Joseph Galloway, who Barry Pepper plays. And so I kind of wish he just kind of comes in midway, even after the battles begin, just pops up.
Yeah, he comes in like an hour and a half into the movie.
Yeah, I think it'd be different if it was at the beginning, but I kind of get what you're coming at. But to me, and one of the nitpicks for me, one of this film, once we get into the battle sequences, all the soldiers mix in. I can't really, unless I know who the actor is, I don't know. I can't really tell the difference.
Yes, including the soldiers from Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna bring this up. I'll bring it up. Have you ever noticed, like, in some of the early war films, I don't know, I can't speak about 60s, 70s, 80s, but definitely 90s and 2000s, it's almost like whoever's on the opposite side of the United States, let's not worry about them at all. Let's cast any and everybody. Let's not put anybody on that side, and let's just treat them like the garbage that we think they are.
I don't
want to step on any toes, or I don't want to be that guy, but this is the first movie where I feel they didn't do that in, which I applaud.
Yeah.
They did hire some really good Vietnamese actors and Asian actors for these roles.
Yes.
And they're like, hey, these guys are important too. Let's shine a little light on it. Even though it's a United States movie and this is America, you know, I still appreciate that they shed some light on Vietnam.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the highest compliments about the movie. They could have easily just kept the American side view of it. You know, they don't give a face or a name to the army that they're going up against. I think having it, even though we don't really have a specific soldier from the Vietnamese side, we have the general. And the general, you have mixed feelings about him, because there's a part of them where you think, oh, that's good, this guy's really going to succeed. But then at the end, when it's like he's finally, quote unquote, defeated, you sympathize with him in a weird sense of the word, in that you could tell this is a man who really believed in that he was going to defeat this American army. And once the realization hits that he has to retreat, it's kind of, it looks like he's failed, honestly. And it's kind of interesting.
Zach, you're a big history buff. I know you know, not only movie wise, but even war fact wise.
Mm-hmm.
Is this some of the other Vietnam War movies? Does this one stand out above the others for you? Or is it like when you think of Vietnam War movies, you're like, it's always Apocalypse Now?
And that's the thing I wanted to bring up, because I think the quote unquote Vietnam War is Apocalypse Now. Apocalypse Now is good.
But it also doesn't help any that Apocalypse Now came out like 10 years after the Vietnam War ended anyway.
Exactly. And something I wanted to, let me look up Vietnam War movies. The most of them that come to mind is Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket, Defy Bloods, which was Spike Lee's movie he did, Good Morning Vietnam, Born on the 4th of July.
What about Platoon? Platoon, what is that? Was that about Platoon, Vietnam as well?
Yep, Platoon was a Vietnam War movie. But, I mean, I think this is the thing I kind of wanted to bring light to the situation, was while Apocalypse Now is a very good film, I've seen it in its entirety once. I've never had the desire to rewatch it, truthfully, honestly. And I think the job of Apocalypse Now was to show the... Yeah.
Well, see, that I feel the opposite.
It is that.
I have the desire to rewatch Apocalypse Now because of the lore behind it. But I get it down. You know, I've never opened that anniversary 4K box. Never opened it.
I still haven't.
And I want to watch it, but I'm like, the girthiness, you know?
Yeah, it's a 3-hour film, I think.
But after today, I kind of feel the way about We Were Soldiers in just a very little limelight. I'm like, you know, well, I'll talk about it some more, but go ahead and bring up what you were going to talk about with Apocalypse Now.
Hold on something real quick. Oh, this movie, We Were Soldiers and Apocalypse Now, depending on what version you watch, there's only a 10-minute difference. This is 2 hours and 23. Apocalypse Now is 2 hours and 33. So there's really not that much of a difference. But I think what I was going to say was Apocalypse Now's journey was to show the PTSD side of Vietnam War, how it can just like mess with your mind and just kind of see if you're going crazy. I think We Were Soldiers' job as a film was to show the graphic nature of what this war did, or what came out of this war.
We Were Soldiers to me also focused on the here and now as far as family goes.
Yeah.
It did the Vin Diesel side of things, family. And not necessarily saying that's a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
but to me, We Were Soldiers, at least in this first time full watch, I just didn't get any memorable war scenes.
I'm gonna have
looking back.
I'm gonna have to disagree, but yeah.
Looking back at it, I just You know, Platoon, you have Willem Dafoe just looking up at the sky. You know, you have Tom Cruise and Born on 4th of July just crying his eyes out, you know, going through what he went through. You have so many great, memorable war scenes in all these great movies. But again, maybe it's the first time I've seen this, but I didn't see any that really stood out to me in this movie.
To me, I think the sequence that really stands out to me, and I remember thinking about this in the first time I watched the movie, was the Broken Arrow scene, when they're literally just surrounded by the Vietnamese army, and they have to send in fighter jets with bombs and machine guns to like help them out. And the scene where one of the bombs gets too close to the American army and almost wipes them out. I mean, it is like that far away from them, and kind of the aftermath of Barry Pepper's character trying to rescue Jimmy, and he tries to pick him up with his legs, and the skin just like melts off of the bone. It's just like I said, it's just so tantalizing to think that there were soldiers that probably went through that and had to like died horrible deaths. I mean, truthfully, and it's just kind of mind-boggling to me.
I did also feel the same way whenever it might have been in the same area when they were cleaning up some of the war battle scenes where they took the water and they, you know, dumped it all over the helicopter to wash the blood off of the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
There's
actors in here that I forgot were there. Like, I knew Sam Elliott was in this. I knew Kerry Russell. I didn't know John Hamm was in this, to be honest.
I have those in my notes. A young John Hamm.
Yeah.
Looking really fantastic.
I remember he's in the beginning, like when they get introduced to Hal Moore, but then, like I said, the problem with the soldiers is that they all intermix, and I don't see him again until like later in the film, even after Jack's death. Like, that could be, when I see him again.
Yeah, that could be a very bad thing, I feel like. You know, Full Metal Jacket, some people might disagree with me, but that's why I feel like I don't put Full Metal Jacket up there with a lot of other great war movies, is because after the opening training scene,
I don't remember anything about that after that.
Yeah, everybody gets mixed in together, and it's like, say, you know, who, what?
Yeah.
And I felt the same way here, other than Mel Gibson, Sam Elliott, you know, Barry Pepper, even, you know, your Chris Klein's, your John Hamm. Let's talk about Ryan Hurst.
I couldn't find him. I don't know which one he was.
Ryan Hurst is in there. He's the young one that keeps saying hi to Sam Elliott, and he's like, "What are you, the damn weatherman?"
Yeah, Sam Elliott has some great scenes in this.
Yeah, and let's talk about Greg Kinnear for a little bit.
Yeah,
somebody who we've never really talked about on the show. Same thing with Ryan Hurst. Maybe because we haven't talked, we haven't talked a lot about Sons of Anarchy or Remember the Titans. But yeah. Ryan Hurst is another one of these young actors who was really hot in the early 2000s,
yeah.
You know, and you get stuff like The Lady Killers, Remember the Titans, The Postman, We Were Soldiers.
He was also on Saving Private Ryan. I don't remember him in that.
Saving Private Ryan. I don't know, man. It's just a lot of young talent here, but because of the way they, you know, this is a movie that's supposed that is called We Were Soldiers. When all in reality, it should be called We Were the Housewives. But I appreciate that about that. I'm not like harping on the movie about that. But like, I have it written down here.
I get it to an extent. I get that for it to be, like you said, We Were Soldiers, it has a lot of time spent with the wives of these soldiers. I get that, but to me as a film person who likes war movies, I appreciate that side of the coin, because we don't like you said, Johnny, they just take a back seat in every other film. You know, even in Saving Private Ryan, there's no mentioning. I mean, they kind of mention it as they go along, but they don't really talk about, there's no scene of the wives or anything. In 1917, there's no scene of one of the brother's kids or one of the soldiers' wives or whatever. They don't there's a scene of where he's like looking at a picture, but there's not an actual actress scene. So,
and maybe if I did my homework, well, I did do my homework, but I didn't, I don't know.
I feel is it time to process it.
No. Is it my fault that I didn't read the plot of a 20-year-old movie, even though I kind of wanted it to stay fresh on my mind? Because if it's in the plot, it's in the synopsis. If I would have read that, you know, it would say it. I mean, exactly what it says. I'll reread it. I read it at the beginning of the episode. The story of the first major battle of the American phase of the Vietnam War and the soldiers on both sides. Keyword soldiers on both sides that fought it. Well, it was their wives and the soldiers. So see, if I would have just read that, maybe I would have had a different outlook on the movie. But just looking at the poster, you know, and you guys can see the poster. I'm here live on the YouTube channel. But We Were Soldiers, the poster, just looking at the cover of the Blu-ray, you know.
It's Mel Gibson.
I completely went in thinking of just a hardcore Vietnam War movie.
Yeah.
But maybe that's my fault.
The theatrical poster is where it's kind of multi-layered. It says fathers, brothers, husbands, and sons. And it has like...
It's right here. It's right here at the bottom. Oh, no, there's the Mel Gibson version.
This one, yeah. The second picture, that's actually the theatrical poster. And it has the first row is like the soldiers. The second layer is the
it's got the wives row, in red on wives, top.
And then it's Mel Gibson. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's advertised the way it's supposed to be. It's kind of. I get what you're saying, but I disagree in that it's exactly what it's supposed to be. And on both sides of the armies,
yeah.
Like I said, we don't really get a core. Probably the one that we probably quote unquote get to know the most is the Vietnam soldier with the glasses. He has the journal. Yep. He tries to bayonet Mel Gibson behind in his back. And gets his head shot off, but I mean, that's about it. Yeah. So,
not that there's anything wrong with that. I, like I said, it's. I was expecting one thing, and I kind of got something different. But that may, like I said, maybe that's my fault. There is a lot of good war scenes though in this movie. Zach, you brought up some. The Ridge is one that I brought up. That's kind of where the movie kicks off, and really from the hour and 15 minute mark on, you get a really good mixture of war and letters to the housewives.
Yeah.
Those scenes where the wives get the letters, it's, man. Yeah. It's powerful.
And it's always fun watching these films when you're young. It's not fun, but it's interesting to watch a film like this when you're young compared to as you get as an adult. The score to this by Nick Glenny Smith, powerful. I know, in the beginning, even we didn't even talk about this, but the opening sequence with the French army that gets ambushed, and the general basically says, you know, one of them says, do we take hostages? And he says, kill everyone that comes. And it goes into that, the very patriotic score, but it's almost kind of like a haunting aid to the film that just basically says, you're in for something that's not going to be easy to watch. So...
The score during the Ridge scene, during the battles in the later half of the movie, mm-hmm. I hope I don't ruin this for you, but as soon as I started hearing it, I'm like, I feel like this is a 90s Mortal Kombat movie.
No, to be honest, because it is Vietnam, just because of the score, I thought Rambo was going to come out, to be honest.
You know what I mean, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like the... It's kind of like a deep voice type thing, I guess you could say. It's just like a roar, kind of like that. But I think by that point, and one thing I will compliment the movie on, it shows like just the unrelenting chaos and death that the Vietnam War was. It was just, you know, every time you think you're safe, every time you think you get a break, every time you think you can just actually take a breather. There's like a new batch of Vietnam soldiers. The wide shot of them going down the hill, down to the valley, is just like, oh my God. Like, I don't know how, like I said, anyone could survive that.
You don't even get, we didn't even really talk about some of the fun scenes of, you know, right when they get there, or a little bit before they get there, Mel Gibson's like, he's been shot. What do you do? You took too long to think. He's been shot. What do you do?
Stuff like that. Montage,
yeah. I will say that's how you kind of know you have a good war film, is when they do small stuff like that. And again, I mean, maybe that might be on the homework, Zach. Maybe we might just try to go out and like Google some of the worst war movies and see what pops up.
Let's see. I'm just gonna put in just worst war movies, just see what comes up. According to, okay, let's do Looper, the worst war movies ever made. Stalingrad, which I haven't seen. Alexander, the Colin Farrell. I don't know. I wouldn't even consider that a war film, to be honest.
Yeah, that's not fair.
Operation Dumbo Drop. That's a good movie.
Ray Liotta.
Classic. Missing in Action, which is Chuck Norris. I don't know, man. It's kind of like a Rambo ripoff. Air America. Have you ever seen that with Robert Downey Jr. and Mel Gibson?
No.
Pearl Harbor. That one gets brought up a lot.
Seen Pearl Harbor.
Oh, well, you better strap yourself in. You thought this was girthy. Three hours.
You wanted to do that a few years ago, didn't you? When it turned 20?
Wasn't
it like a 2000s
movie? I think it turned 20 years old this year, actually. Let me look. Let's see. Oh, no, it came out. It was 20 years last year. Yeah, I tried to get us to do it for Memorial Day last year, but what did we do last year?
We did the vote, and I think it was Inglourious Bastards.
That's right. And every time we did the poll, I always put We Were Soldiers in there to see if it would win, but it never did. Wind Talkers with Nicolas Cage about the Navajo Code Talkers. I thought that was pretty good.
With the goat, Nick Cage.
Yeah.
I am surprised.
Have you ever seen Gods and Generals? It's the Civil War movie with Robert Duvall.
Jeff Daniels?
Yeah.
I have not.
I've seen... I actually saw that in theater, actually, Gods and Generals. Oh, wow. And Gettysburg. That's another one that gets brought up. I think Gods and Generals is considered terrible, but Gettysburg is kind of considered the quintessential Civil War film. So,
you know, there's so many war films out there. I wouldn't mind talking about some more this year or later on this year. We talked about earlier this year, Denzel, about World War, or about the Civil War.
Oh, Glory. Yeah.
Glory. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a fun conversation.
I am surprised, though, We Were Soldiers, Mel Gibson, 20 years old, that there hasn't been any kind of special extra release with this movie.
Yeah, you know, the funny
thing... Do you think it had anything to do with how much money it made? Like, you know, 75 million to make, and it only grossed 114 million. So it just barely made its budget back?
No, you know, these re-releases of, like, anniversary films, it's always...
A lot of politics involved.
Yeah. I know he is going to get, like, a still book in August, I think. Is that turning 30 years old, I think?
I think so. 95.
Wind Talkers is actually 20 years old this year. Wow.
It just surprised me. I think there's a lot of politics involved when it comes to anniversary releases. You know, and I think Mel Gibson
gets a
lot
of
flack. I think he gets a lot of flack.
I'm going to be honest.
A lot of his movies just hardly get any kind of touches for re-releases. Zach, do you bear to say that it started with him getting his flack because of Passion of the Christ? He did something that, you know, that's kind of like a no-no to do in Hollywood, and somebody took a gamble on it, and it made a shit ton of money.
Oh my God. Like, do you remember when that movie came out? That movie made
so controversial.
It made $612 million worldwide. Wow.
Yeah.
and that turns 20 years old in 2 years. Wow, that's insane.
I think surely it doesn't have anything to, well, and I mean, he did a few years ago too. He did have that drunk video where he came out and said some bad things.
Yeah, you know, you know how Hollywood is. You know, you do something wrong and you're kind of blast out of Hollywood. I mean, since Hacksaw Ridge, other than straight to DVD stuff. Oh, you had, did you see Father Stu? He was in that, wasn't he? From this year.
Yeah, he was excellent in Father Stu.
Yeah, so I think people just kind of forget, like, oh yeah, that's crazy Mel Gibson. But I mean,
well, he did say some pretty naughty stuff though.
Yeah.
So.
But I mean, you know, we're gonna talk about Signs here in a couple months. That movie it was one of the top five grossing films of that year, making almost $400 million. Yeah, I mean, Spider-Man, Attack of the Clones, which you guys talked about last week, and Chamber of Secrets and Signs, those were the top four films of the year. So I mean, I'm hoping for Signs for a Steelbook release, but I don't think it's gonna happen.
I don't think it's gonna happen either. Going back to We Were Soldiers, after Jack dies, you know, you get the emotions from Kerry Russell and even the emotions from Mel Gibson saying, hey, you know, he died, you know, saving, pretty much not saving him, but he died believing what he believed in, or what I believed in.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the beginning of the movie, Chris Klein is like, he talks about him and his wife going and doing like a mission, I think, spending a year in Africa.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I just don't want to give, I don't want to have a son or a daughter and they be an orphan. And man, it just, it kind of hits you in the feels. Even though I didn't enjoy Chris Klein's character in this. It's not that I didn't enjoy, I just didn't feel any emotion to the character. Yeah. Like you still feel it when Mel Gibson's sitting there with.
It's a little predictable. I mean, it's clearly obvious that they were, he has a new baby daughter. Jack gives Hal the little bracelet with the daughter's name on it, or it's wearing it on his wrist. It's like, oh, so that's going to come back. And it's obvious that he's going to die. And I will say Mel Gibson's performance on the idea that he led his men into a massacre, I think he sells that very well. Cause after the battle, he's just kind of by himself and he kind of sees the carnage around him. And he's just like, you know, I led these men to this,
to their death,
and I will always feel responsible for that. So,
and then you get that final shot of the helicopter lifting up with Mel Gibson's foot just ever so gracefully getting off the ground of Vietnam.
Yeah, what do you think about that? It's set up earlier in the film before they go to war, saying he will be the first to step on the battlefield and the last to step off of it, and I will bring everybody home dead or alive.
I thought that it was very, very fitting. Mm-hmm. You know, when that first line started, I'm almost kind of like, he's not making it out alive. You know, I was like,
oh, you thought they would kill him off? Yeah,
I thought Mel Gibson would die, or I thought he would be one of those where, I almost kind of thought it was like going to be an Armageddon ending with Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck. I thought Mel Gibson would put his life on the line and sacrifice himself so Jack can get back home to his baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you know, they pushed it so hard kind of that they really wanted you to fall for Chris Klein's character, you know, but then when they introduced Barry Pepper, you're like, oh, I care more about the reporter than I do the young soldier kind of.
Well, by that point, I think Jack's already dead by the time. Well,
He's got one more scene and then he dies.
Yeah. And by that point, Barry Pepper kind of fills that gap in the movie. And so it's kind of like, what was the point of bringing him in if, you know, he gets killed off? And I mean, they didn't even, I get it. I get when you have this type of film and you kind of have to have certain characters for the audience to latch onto, but I think it would have been a much more fitting send off for that character is if we just have a scene of Carrie Russell at the gravesite or something to that nature, or them bringing the bodies back home or something like that. And it's just when Carrie Russell gets the letter, when Madeline Stowe brings her the letter, that's it. she has one scene where she gets the bracelet that he has, and that's it.
Because she thought like that the letter was for her. She thought the letter was for Mel Gibson dying.
Yeah.
For Madeline Stowe's husband.
When the taxi driver goes up to the door and she said she, like you said, Johnny, she thinks that the letter's for her, and it's just like, no, I'm trying to find another house down the road. She gets, I mean, anyone that's ever been in that situation, I'm sure would have a nervous breakdown, but I'm kind of glad that's in the film, because it just shows like the emotional response that these wives had when they got the
letter. You have the Blu-ray as well, right?
No, I have the DVD.
Is the 30-minute documentary called Getting It Right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's on the Blu-ray then too.
Yeah. And one of the things that Joseph Galloway is in it. The wife that Carrie Russell plays has like a brief moment in the movie, in the documentary. So they actually talked to the real people that survived it. One of the things that Hal Moore said that Hollywood got wrong was Vietnam War. They just didn't not advertise it, but just they didn't depict it correctly. And he really signed off on this movie after it came out saying, yeah, that's as bad as real as it's going to get. So it's like World War II veterans that watch Saving Private Ryan. A lot of them can't get through that first 20 minutes because it's just so realistic. So
it is insane, you know, how some of these war movies are so realistic. And, you know, so many war veterans out there now have PTSD so bad to where 4th of July this time of year is terrible for them.
Yeah,
they have to have headphones on. They can't go to sleep at night because the fireworks are just so bad because it triggers of signs of war for them.
Yeah.
What
do you think? Let me see if I can get this to pull up. According to Rotten Tomatoes. Oh man, that movie turned 20 years old last year. You remember Black Hawk Down with Josh Hartnett?
Never seen it.
Really?
Oh, wow. Never seen that or Pearl Harbor.
Well, I'll just say one of them's better than the other one. What do you think is the... According to Rotten Tomatoes, what do you think the top-rated war movie is?
Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah.
Without cheating?
It's not at all what you think it is.
Without cheating, I would have to say it's probably maybe Platoon.
Nope, it's Casablanca, and it's set in the backdrop of World War II, but it's not a war movie. The first actual war movie that is actually a war movie at 92% is at number 4 is Dunkirk. All Quiet on the Western Front is number 5. The Hurt Locker is number 8. Apocalypse Now is number 10.
I haven't even forgot about newer war movies too, like The Hurt Locker.
Zero Dark Thirty is number 19.
I forgot about that one.
God dang, what?
Even something like Foxtrot, what's Whiskey Foxtrot with Tina Fey?
Yeah,
that's a war movie technically.
Saving Private Ryan is number 38. Above
those Bastards.
Three Kings is above it, and Grave of the Fireflies, which I've never heard of.
That's why we say fuck Rotten Tomatoes.
Full Metal Jacket's above it. The Deer Hunter, which I've actually heard is really good. The Bridge of River Kwai is number 26. So, that doesn't make any sense. When you put into Google war movies, the first one that shows up is 1917. Hacksaw Ridge, Dunkirk, Lone Survivor.
Those are all up-to-date recent movies.
Fury, American Sniper, 13 Hours. People are weird.
I forgot about 13 Hours. But you know, let's use that as like a hashtag. Let's ask everybody out there. Send us an email. You know, even though we're talking our top five movies so far of 2022, just send an email. It doesn't even have to be a top five. Just send in one war movie. Send us your favorite war movies, and I'll read them out on Monday.
Yeah. Or Zach, if you have top five, you know, let us know.
Zach, do you have a favorite scene that you would like to talk about from We Were Soldiers?
Favorite is kind of a weird term for this film, but I mean, if I
have memorable, do you have a memorable
scene? That's better. A memorable scene is probably the Broken Arrow scene. That it just an unleash of just hellish violence and just the napalm and everything is just so. It's incredibly well done, and just the aftermath of it, like I said, with Jimmy, is just heartbreakingly terrible. And even the final charge, I guess, if you will, when they're at the ridge, when Mel Gibson says fix bayonets, and they just kind of going up the hill, and you think they're going to get slaughtered, and then the chopper comes in with the machine gun and starts mowing people down. It's kind of, like I said at the beginning of this, it's the fact that not just Americans, but even the Vietnamese and the French and everyone that was involved with this, it's just kind of astounding that people went through something like this. And so, what about you, Johnny?
Favorite or memorable scene? I would probably say, even though I do kind of like the score of this movie, I will say it did feel weird watching a war movie that doesn't have a soundtrack. You agree?
I think it had a soundtrack. I think the score.
I'm talking about like it didn't have those. They didn't spend money
like pop songs, like Clearwater. Yeah. That's kind of weird. Yeah.
But if I had to say some powerful scenes, if you will, that final scene of Mel Gibson's foot coming off of the ground, it also made me think back to him sitting his daughter down, or all of his kids down, and praying on the bed. Yeah. Just so old school and so mid-America feeling. And then, you know what, something about the feet, man. I don't, Quentin Tarantino helped direct this movie, but it had, you know, the shot of his feet next to his daughter's feet when they were praying.
Yeah.
I just thought that scene was just so powerful, because something like that, you don't know if that could be your last. And we think about that now, like car accidents, bombings, gunmen,
school shootings. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be like that now without war. But yeah, man, when you put war on top of a scene like that with a daughter, and it's just, you know, it's out there. So that scene was memorable. Carrie Russell's performance when she found out that Chris Klein had passed away was powerful. And I gotta tip my hat off to Barry Pepper as just a hole in this movie, and him narrating his part of the movie. He got me. And you know, I think he's somebody who gets underlooked as well. He gets overlooked.
Oh yeah.
And I think he's a very underrated actor.
Yeah, and I will throw some credit at Sam Elliott. I thought he was a good comedic relief when they're probably, you know, when the scenes got really, really tense and probably need a breather. When Barry Pepper's on the ground, I said, "You ain't going to take no pictures down there, Sonny." It's just great.
Yeah. So that's another thing is, like, I wish there was more dialogue in this movie.
Yeah.
As far as just like Mel Gibson and his soldiers.
Yeah.
I wish,
would agree with that.
I wish there was more, you know, just pep in the step as far as like trying to get your guys rallied up. But so yeah, I would say those are some pretty memorable scenes. Anything that Mel Gibson was in as far as the movie goes, I do believe that he had a phenomenal performance in this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, some people say it's Mel Gibson's best performance, other than maybe like Braveheart and some other films. It's definitely worth a watch. Paramount Plus, go check it out. We Were Soldiers. Star rating, Zach, 1 out of 10. I'll go first, and I'm going to give this movie, just on rewatchability, I'm going to give it a 6. just for me, you know, I've had it for years, never seen it, watched it today. And even though I can appreciate more scenes, than there's more positive than negative for this movie, I just don't know if I have the desire to kind of rewatch it anytime soon.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that's fair. This would be like, we had this conversation last week on the bonus episode. Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, would not be my first Star Wars movie to pick up and watch if I just wanted to watch a good Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
We Were Soldiers, to me, would not be my first pick if I just wanted to pick something up and watch a good war movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Yeah.
So, for me, it's going to be a 6.
For Zach, me, for you? I think just because I had the theater experience, just because I had seen this as a young kid and getting to relive it now as an adult, it was a very memorable experience to compare the two viewings. And so for me personally, I'm going to give it a 9. It's not something that, like you said, Johnny, I'm going to rewatch. I would probably watch 1917. I'd probably watch Saving Private Ryan before this again, but
it's memorable for you.
It's very memorable. It's something that I'll always have that memory of going to see it and kind of feeling disturbed walking out.
No, that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
And so, yeah, I think it's a 9. I think, you know, I'm probably going to catch some criticism. I think it's a very, very underrated war film that, you know, it may not stay, it kind of lives in the shadow of some of the greats, but I think it's deserving to be right up there with them. So.
Yeah. And you know, that's all I base my star rating on is memory. You know, if stuff jumps out at me, how memorable is the movie going to be? And then would I ever have the desire to rewatch it again? But
yeah,
that's me. And,
yeah, what'd you give Attack of the Clones out of curiosity?
I think I went back and gave it, what did I give it? I think it was either a 5 or 6.
Okay.
Yeah. It was 5 or 6. So yeah, I mean, I've been kind of harsh on movies lately, but again, I just haven't had the patience. And if something sticks out at me, I think somebody messaged me the other day about how dare you give Ambulance a 6. And I'm like, it's a girthy Michael Bay movie. It's nothing spectacular. Like, yeah. I am going to awe at the explosions and the $25 yeah. million dollar budget. But I mean, and Jake Gyllenhaal, don't get me wrong. Jake Gyllenhaal in the movie was phenomenal, you know?
Are you ever going to watch that again?
Probably not.
Yeah.
So that's what I base anybody out there watching or listening. That's what I solely based a lot of my star rating on, is if I'm ever going to want to rewatch that movie again. So,
I mean, I've seen Ambulance. I liked it. I thought it was one of the better Michael Bay movies that he's done in quite some time, to be honest.
I don't know how this turned into a Michael Bay discussion, but it's fun. But, it's fine.
I mean, I give it a 7. I
you liked it a little bit more than I did.
Yeah.
So,
but like you said, by the end of the year, I don't even know if I'm going to remember that movie, to be yeah. honest. So.
And that's you know, going back, that's just kind of how I feel about We Were Soldiers, at least this time around. The good thing about owning movies, Zach, is guess what? I can revisit them anytime I want to.
Look at that blockbuster behind you. I mean, seriously.
before
we get out of here, we got to talk about it happened today. Oh, I guess happened yesterday. The passing of James Caan, which I'm sure we'll talk about on Monday. But did you have any thoughts? It's so funny that his two famed movies is The Godfather and Elf, the two that people remember him from.
Hey, you know what? He was my favorite part of The Godfather. Mm-hmm. I loved him as Sonny. He's a hothead gangster. He is the person who drew me into The Godfather when I first watched it. Al Pacino, not Marlon Brando. James Caan was fantastic for me in The Godfather. He made looking like a gangster being cool because of, hey, I'm gonna smash your camera, throw some money, I'm gonna fucking pay for it, get out of here before I bust your face. Yeah. He's the guy who drew me into The Godfather, like I said. So sad day for movie fans and moviegoers everywhere. James Caan, however you do want to pronounce it, he was a great actor. And you know, go out and find older roles and older performances like that, because you're going to find, yeah, you're going to find some amazing gems out there. So,
yeah,
rest in peace to a great, and, you know, we'll talk about him more on Monday. Yeah. Speaking of Monday, guys, July 11th, 7 p.m. right here on Imasawa Productions YouTube channel, or 9 p.m. Monday night, wherever you listen to podcasts at. We are talking Thor, Love and Thunder, episode 201, this Monday coming up. Zach, do you have anything you want to add to We Were Soldiers?
I just go check it out. Like you said, if you have Paramount Plus, you can easily watch it right there. I'm sure you can find the Blu-ray.
Yeah, you can find it real cheap. Somewhere. Go check it out.
Go check out CDR. I'm sure they have a copy of it.
There you go. So join us Monday, July 11th. We have a full brand new 2-hour episode. Fun top 5, star rating, email bag is girthy. This Monday, Thor, Love and Thunder, right here on the Cinnamon Movie Podcast.